is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine crisis. I go immediately to Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft because the headlines from London and the United States are becoming more focused on a contest between NATO, the United States, and Russia and its ally, Belarus, and others. The headlines in the Telegraph tell a story that is alarming. Russia's ally, Belarus, criticizes war effort for dragging on, and Russia practices nuclear missile launches, and bloody battles rage as Russia tries to destroy steelworks defenders. In New York, the New York Times is reporting now that the U.S. intelligence services provided information to Ukraine to augment the strike on Russian generals. We've noted for weeks now that the number of Russian senior officers, KIA, is unusual. Well, now the New York Times reports that that is a consequence of the U.S. giving real-time intelligence. Anatole, a very good day to you. Your conversations in The Signal with Michael Bloom begin in the historical view of this contest between Moscow and Kyiv, between Russia and Ukraine. We don't need to go all the way back to medieval times. We can just begin with Vladimir Putin's essay of the summer of 2021. How is, right now, Ukraine viewed by the Kremlin leadership right now? Is it regarded as a sovereign state? Is it regarded as a rebellion, as an insurrection, as outlaws? What is the metaphor that it's used on the basis of Vladimir Putin's essay that you can tell us and help us understand the war making today? Good day to you, Anatole.
Hello, John. It's nice to be back. Well, I think that the whole Russian narrative, and indeed Putin's narrative on Ukraine, has been very, well, one could almost say schizophrenic, because there have been two main elements. And this, by the way, is true of Russians much more generally. It was true, for example, of Alexander Solzhenitsyn's views of Ukraine. One of them says that the Ukrainians and Russians are historically basically one people, or two very closely linked peoples, who emerged, you know, originally from the same, you know, state and culture of Kiev and Rus 1,000 years ago, who have been divided by wicked elements, Ukrainian extremists, but above all, foreigners. You know, first the Poles, then the Austrians, now the Americans, and the Swedes. I forgot about the Swedes and the Turks, but who naturally belong together. But you see, that coexists with another attitude, which both intellectually but also in policy terms is totally contradictory, which is, look, if the Ukrainians really insist on breaking away, then we must keep those particular parts of Ukraine which we regard as historically, you know, always having been Russian and not Ukrainian, and over which in Russia's view there is no question that they are really Ukrainian, which means Crimea and the Donbass. Now, you see, the difference is that, and this, by the way, has been absolutely reflected since the war began. Putin's initial aim, clearly, was to capture Kyiv, get rid of the, as he regards it, the illegitimate anti-Russian government of Zelensky, and replace it with a pro-Russian government. So that was to turn Ukraine back into a younger brother, subordinate ally, client state of Russia, the whole of Ukraine, possibly let the far western areas go. Now, that was defeated by the Ukrainians outside Kyiv. Russia failed to capture Kyiv, suffered very heavy casualties, was pushed back, and has now abandoned that. You know, Russian troops have abandoned northern Ukraine, and they are going for the second option, which is to take all those areas of Ukraine which Russia regards as historically Russian, and which were conquered by Russia from the Turks in the 18th century. So those are the two Russian nationalist positions on Ukraine, and I think we've seen a clear shift as a result of defeat on the battlefield from the first to the second.
There are two philosophies that I want to explore. One is based on an icon on the side of a building in Moscow of an old woman, very elderly woman, babushka, waving a Russian flag and asking for help. The first, however, is bookish. You, in your conversation with Michael Bloom, you referenced that Russia sees itself as partly European and partly Western. The surprise
partly
is...
Partly Asian.
Thank you. European, Western, and Asian, yes, largely not. The surprise is the links to Byzantium. What does that mean to Moscow, that they are the heirs of the Eastern Roman Empire?
It means that Russia regards itself as the head of the Orthodox Church everywhere, with the leadership of all the Orthodox churches in, you know, those of the Balkans and Ukraine, obviously. But the second is that Russia, in one form, obviously, under the Tsars, in another form under communism, in a third form under Yeltsin, under Putin, The Russian elites have always regarded Russia as one, as an independent great power, as one pole of a multipolar world, though, of course, they didn't phrase it that way in the past. But there has absolutely never been any willingness for Russia to become the subordinate ally of anyone else. And seen from Russia, that is what America aimed at after the end of the Cold War, that Russia should become, in essence, a client state of America. And that was never acceptable. By the way, I mean, it's interesting that, of course, India is much closer to the United States than Russia. There have been tremendous efforts by America to woo India and turn India into an ally against China. But as we see from India's response to the war in Ukraine and to American attempts to get India to impose sanctions on Russia, India too is absolutely determined to be an independent great power. It will cooperate with America when it thinks that is in India's interest, but under no circumstances whatsoever will India take orders from the United States. There is a considerable symmetry there, I think, between India and Russia in that regard.
A detail about Byzantium, which I welcome, because this stretches us 2,000 years to see how this philosophy has developed. That introduces the fact that the Russian mission in Ukraine is, yes, it's military, but it's also deeply based on a belief system, on a common belief system. They're liberating people who worship as they do. Does that message go out to the Russian people that we are blessed by the church to recapture our co-religionists? Do they talk that way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, more and more so. The Kremlin has been using this traditional Russian religious nationalist line and has mobilized the Russian Orthodox Church to support the war. In Putin's case, not, I think, very sincerely. One may remember that Stalin did the same thing during the Second World War. It's an obvious internal propaganda mobilizing weapon to try to use. However, one has to ask oneself, I mean, whether even the propaganda machine of the Kremlin, which has within Russia has proved tremendously successful, but whether even that can survive in the long run. The spectacle of Russia destroying Ukrainian cities and slaughtering Ukrainian civilians and being resisted by very determined Ukrainian troops, and not just ethnic Ukrainians, but Russian Ukrainians as well. I mean, at a certain point, I think, reality... Well, you remember what Lincoln said, you can fool all the people some of the time, but not all the people all the time.
The other icon I've seen on a building in Moscow, it might be reproduced everywhere, it's several stories high. It's an elderly woman called a babushka, bent with the look of great anguish, waving what appears to be a Russian flag, not a Soviet flag, a Russian flag, and asking for help. And I'm told this is part of the representation that makes the approval ratings for Vladimir Putin and the war effort so high, that the presumption in Russia is that the Russian people, especially the elderly, have been discarded and not taken care of, and therefore this mission is about our rescuing our elders. Is that something that Putin came to last summer? I don't recall it. Is that something that is talked about, that this is not just about religion, this is also about helping people who are doomed?
Well, I mean, this has been key to Putin's message from the very start. And by the way, I mean, has a real basis in reality. I mean, one of the most shameful Russians, but some of the rest of us as well, shocking images from Russia in the 1990s was the way in which Soviet veterans of the Second World War, military veterans, but also just the old people, you know, the women who had worked for victory and so forth, had been abandoned in the 1990s through the collapse of the Russian economy, but also, of course, the catastrophic economic measures introduced on Western advice. And you had a colossal surge in the death rate among elderly Russian people. And you had the spectacle of elderly Russians selling their last possessions on the street. And Putin, you know, really, you know, came to power with the promise that the Soviet legacy, but also the Soviet veterans, the elderly people, would be helped and respected. So this, you know, this has been key to Putin's image and appeal from the beginning. And by the way, I mean, he did restore the pension system and do, you know, and help to provide a decent life for a great many elderly Russians. But now, of course, this is linked to very much a Second World War Soviet image. The most famous Soviet propaganda poster of the Second World War was the figure of Mother Russia, but portrayed essentially as not as an old woman, but a middle-aged woman. Rodina Mat, the motherland, calls you to fight, to defend Russia. A very un-Soviet propaganda poster, by the way, but deeply Russian nationalist. It's interesting, though, that now and perhaps very emblematic in a way, that the woman has got much older. You know, that this is now an elderly Russia appealing to her sons to... Or grandsons, rather.
Right. Not no. Grandsons. No, it's a compelling image. I'm speaking to Anatole Levin about a conversation he had on The Signal. You can access it with Michael Bloom. We're going to turn now to the headlines that suggest the Russian case that this is not a war with Ukraine, but a war with NATO. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.